Okay. So, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about your next assignment, okay? And that is the shutter speed assignment. Here's what you're going to need to do for this assignment. You need to shoot the equivalent of one roll of 36 exposures. Shoot more if you possibly can. If you got a digital camera, it should make it nice and easy for you in terms of shooting more pictures. The more you shoot, the better off you'll be. You're going to need to shoot for the following things for in terms of the assignment. So you need to shoot one picture that uses a very fast shutter speed that stops the action. It should be the kind of picture where it's obvious that the action has stopped. If you take a picture of a person walking, it may not be all that obvious that you took a fast shutter speed picture. They may just look like they're standing there. So you're going to really need to think and consider how you use this and what you use it on so that you get the most bang for the buck in terms of that fast shutter speed. Okay? You're also going to need to shoot for either of the two possibilities for slow shutter speed. One of them has the subject moving and it's blurred. So if you were going to take a picture of me and your camera's on a tripod and I move in front of the camera, then I would be blurred. Okay? The slow shutter speed blur shot nearly always requires a tripod. Okay? There is an alternative to that, which is also useful with a tripod. We'll talk about that. The alternative is to do a panning shot. It is also a slow shutter speed shot. But rather than necessarily having your camera on a tripod, what you do is you follow your subject with your camera during the course of that movement. Okay? If you do that, your subject will stay in the same place in the film plane and the background will move in relationship to that. So the subject will be sharp, but the background will be blurred, as opposed to the other version where the subject is blurred and the background is sharp. It'll make more sense once you start to see it. So those are the three potential types of pictures that you're going to take. So you need one sharp image, fast shutter speed, stop action kind of picture, and the other is going to be a blurred shot. The main goal here is to successfully use shutter speed to enhance the aesthetic and conceptual understanding of the images. Remember, like I said before, don't approach this as a technical exercise. It's easy to do as a technical exercise, but it's terribly, terribly boring if you do it that way. You could go outside, you could take a picture of your friend jumping in their backyard, and you would probably successfully be able to complete the assignment, but how interesting would that be? So I want you to use the shutter speed in a really interesting sort of way. I recommend that you reread the sections of the textbook if you happen to have it, or find your camera manual, make sure you understand how the shutter speed works with your camera. If you don't have the shutter priority mode or a manual camera, then you'll want to look, if you have like a point and shoot that has some automated modes, your automated mode may be something like the sports mode. So if you have the sports mode, that's trying to get you a very fast shutter speed. Okay, so keep that in mind and make sure you understand how your camera actually functions. Keep in mind the following things. If you'll remember from that very first talk, the big technical lecture, when we talked about shutter speed and I said that the apparent motion of your subject in reference to the camera is going to be really important. It's really important for this assignment in particular. So you need to remember that if a subject is moving side to side in front of the camera, you're much more likely to see blur than if they're moving towards you or away from you. Okay, so if you're really trying to get a blurred shot, you probably don't want something coming directly towards you or away from you in the shot. If you really like that sort of concept, maybe you just need to, you know, step to the side and let it be a little off axis so it's not coming directly towards you or away from you. Just keep that in mind. Now, there's a couple other things that we need to consider here. And if you will go to the teaching website, go to the projects page, and download the shutter speed assignment that I have there. You can download it as a PDF or just print it off of that one page. There are three really three, actually there's four really important little steps directly below the main information. It would be very handy to have this with you when you're shooting as a reminder. So let me just give you that information. Your subject's movement relative to the camera will greatly influence how much of your subject appears to be frozen or blurred, right? A successful blurred shot will have something sharp in the picture. Okay? When you're doing your blurred shot, we don't want a totally blurry shot. We don't want one where you're shaking the camera while your subject's moving. That can work occasionally, actually rarely. So we're going to want something sharp in the picture as a reference to that motion, right? You're almost always going to need your camera on a tripod. If you don't have a tripod, you can check one out from us, or you can use some sort of a tripod substitute. So if you happen to be out and you're near a table, you could set your camera on a table. That would help. It's not as good as a tripod, but it'll help. And when you're doing this, you need to be very, very conscious of how you're holding the camera if you're hand holding it. Let's go to the third one here. It will be much easier to get a stop action shot where there's a lot of light. Stop action shots require a lot of light. Burn that into your head. Stop action shots require a lot of light. Conversely, it's much easier to get a blurred shot where there is less light. The reason is it'll give you slower shutter speeds, which allows you to do that blurred motion. And I have just sort of a big sort of general thing, just as a reminder, you will not be able to get a blurred shot in bright sunlight. You won't be able to do it. Let me say it again. You will not be able to get a blurred shot in bright sunlight. And lastly, use a tripod for all slow shutter speed shots. It's a little bit harder with a point and shoot camera. I think they're considerably lighter, so you tend to not feel like you're going to blur the shot by camera movement, but you need to be very conscious of how you're holding your camera. Okay. One other thing, just in terms of this assignment, almost sharp doesn't quite get it. So if you're doing that really fast shutter speed shot and something's a little bit blurry, you haven't quite gotten it. So we want something to be totally sharp, stop action in there. Okay, so you need to be very conscious of how you're doing this. So, as you're shooting for the assignment, the technical concerns are based on the apparent motion of your subject. In terms of subject matter, again, you can shoot anything you want to. You want to avoid the cliche thing, but our main goal here is to successfully use shutter speed to enhance the aesthetic and conceptual understanding of the image. That's what the assignment is. Any questions about that? Okay, so let's look at some pictures here. Again, we're going to go back to the history of photography. Really, this is one of the most important pictures in the history of photography. It's the first known picture to contain a living human being. Now, the original photographic processes were so slow, they were not very sensitive to light. They required 8-hour-long exposures, and then as the times got better, it got into hour-long exposures, and then into, you know, the 20-minute, 30-minute-long exposures. And then they finally refined this so that it got better. So as you look at this, what we're looking at is a street corner in Paris. Now, Paris in 1838 was already a city of millions of people. There were millions of people. That, in fact, there were lots of people walking down the street when this picture was taken. But the only one that recorded is that man standing right there with his foot up on a shoeshine stand. So he stood still long enough where his shadow essentially recorded. Okay. Now, if you'll look at the street, you'll see there's like these two dark lines here that sort of run down the length of the street. Those are the shadows underneath horse-drawn carts. So while they're taking this picture, I mean, this picture was a very long exposure. These horse-drawn carts were moving up and down the street. People were milling about on the street. But the exposure was so slow that the only thing living that recorded was that guy, and only because he stood there long enough. You can still do this sort of thing even today. If your shutter speed is long enough, people won't record if they're moving quick enough. Pretty interesting, huh? So the shutter speed issue was really a very technical challenge there for a while. Once they started to solve it, a lot of other things started to happen in the world. In fact, once they figured out the shutter speed thing, motion pictures weren't that far away. And this is how it happened. There was a governor in California, had a good friend, and they had a wager about how horses ran. Now, at the time in paintings, when people were painting horses, they always painted these sort of horses that were running, but they always looked awkward. People said that there's something not quite right there. So the question was, when a horse runs, does it have all 4 feet off the ground at any one time? A lot of people were betting that that wasn't true, that they had 2 feet on the ground at some point always. So the governor of California hired a photographer, a guy from England. His name was Edward Muybridge. He was a photographic expert, went to a racetrack, set up on a racetrack down the length of the racetrack, a big, big white panel down the length of the racetrack so there'd be a lot of contrast there. And he set up trip wires in 12 different locations down the track at equal spacing. And what they were going to do is have the horse run down the track, and as it hit the trip wire, it would take a picture. So they did that. They had the horse run down the track. It took these 12 pictures. And then after they processed them, lo and behold, there it is. A horse does indeed have all 4 feet off the ground at one time. But what painters had thought was when that happened, the feet were out in front and out behind. And the interesting thing was, they're actually tucked in underneath the horse when it's running. So there was interesting sort of scientific information that came from that, but there was also interesting artistic information that came from that too. The people who painted horses now painted horses an entirely different way. There was another interesting thing that happened as well. At some point, somebody took these pictures and had them in a stack and flipped through them and said, wow, you know what? When you flip through these fast enough, I can see the horse running. It looked like that. This was the first sort of invention of the motion picture. Muybridge took this information. Somewhere along the line, he ended up talking to Thomas Edison, who invented a device for flipping pictures really quickly. And it wasn't long from there before we had motion pictures like we know today. There was a whole sort of scientific exploration about the persistence of vision. If you have 24 frames that pop every second, then you get this really smooth motion. So there was lots of interesting things that came from these experiments early in the history of photography. So as films advanced, as they got faster and better and easier to use, we started to get some interesting things. People started to think of this as artistic and scientific at the same time. There were people who did scientific investigations of motion. Muybridge was one of those. There was another guy from France named Marais who did a very interesting series of motion studies that were very scientific. There were other people who started to do interesting pictures that had to do with shutter speed in their own right. I'd shown you Lartigue's pictures before. Here's another one. Interesting sort of weird flaw here. What happened when films got better and they were able to make them on a plastic type base called nitrate base, they were able to actually make film in rolls, and they made smaller cameras that allowed people to very portably move their camera from place to place. And rather than taking one picture at a time on sheet film, they were able to have a camera that they could advance a roll of film. This Lartigue picture is from one of those early rolls. The shutters that were inside of cameras were not terribly technologically advanced, and so there were some interesting things that could happen. If your subject moved at exactly the same speed as your shutter, you ended up getting these weird sort of distortions. So this car didn't actually have oval-shaped wheels, but the car was moving at essentially the same speed as the shutter. So you ended up getting this weird sort of stretch thing. You actually can do something very similar with a scanner or a Xerox machine. If you put your hand on a Xerox machine and you turn it on and you follow your hand with the scanner bar as it goes by, you'll get a Xerox of a big, long, stretched out hand. Right? If you hadn't ever done it before, you should do it at least once. It's kind of fun. Okay. So you start to get these interesting sort of defects that people can start to exploit. They start to make more interesting things like that. So you start to get these changes. So it changed not only sort of technical, scientific things, it started to affect artwork, and it started to affect the journalism world. So it's hard for you to imagine now, because the world is so full of images, we're sort of bombarded with images every day. There was a time when magazines and newspapers didn't have photographs in them. They had drawings instead. So when they finally invented the process by which they could reproduce images in newspapers, it changed the world. We had photographic versions of what was happening throughout the world. It was an amazing thing. So things like this could start to be spread. This is the Hindenburg, the dirigible Hindenburg, coming to America and exploding on its arrival in New Jersey. Now the thing is, at the time, this was before we had entered World War II. Nazi Germany was still over in Europe. We hadn't made a decision one way or another about going to the war. Nazi Germany was actually doing sort of a propaganda tour of the world, so they'd bring their Zeppelins over here and fly them around, and everybody'd say, ooh, very nice technology, you know, we like it. So that sort of thing was happening. And then the Hindenburg came to America, and it was about to dock with this mooring mast, and something happened and it exploded. Now, these Zeppelins were filled with hydrogen rather than helium, so that hydrogen gas is very explosive. They speculate that maybe there was some lightning that hit it, but it could have been sabotages, all kinds of interesting sort of pre-World War II spy stuff going on. But because film was so good, they were able to get these stop-action photos. In fact, there's a movie of this thing catching on fire and burning. It happens in a very short amount of time. It's really an impressive piece of film work. But they were able to disseminate this image out to newspapers in America in a very quick rate because of the shutter speed thing. They were able to catch this. So then the art world really starts to catch hold. So museums and galleries start to show artwork, and people start to take advantage of those things that fast shutter speeds could offer with really good film. This is a picture done by a photographer named Philippe Halsman, and it's a picture of the painter, the surrealist painter Salvador Dali. When Halsman was doing pictures of people, he was a famous portraitist, and he would do pictures essentially of famous people, actors, artists, things like that. And one of his goals as a portrait taker was to do a portrait that would really say something about who that person was. It wasn't just trying to capture a likeness of a famous individual. He wanted it to be more than that. He wanted that picture to say more than that. Since Salvador Dali was a surrealist painter, he wanted to do a picture of Dali that reflected what Dali's paintings were about. So he took some things that came from Dali paintings, water that looked like it was solid and floating, things that hovered in the air, things like that, and he figured out how to do it. So an interesting picture like this, there's a couple of things going on. Well, some of the things like the chair, it's hung from a wire. So, you know, the easel and the painting, those are hung from the wire, but the water and the cats were not hung from wires. So essentially, just off the set, just out of the camera's view, you have one person with a big bucket of water, right? And Halsman says, okay, go. And then he throws the bucket of water up in the air. On the other side of the set, there's a person I call a cat wrangler who was tossing cats in the air, right? It's an interesting sort of set to be on. I would like to have been there. So, but there was a reason for doing this. I mean, it was fun, no doubt, tossing water and cats in the air, but it made sense in terms of who this person was. So here, I'm going to say this is one of those really good examples of when shutter speed enhances both the conceptual and the technical understanding of this image. Ideally, that's what you want to be thinking about, is how do you use that shutter speed to make your picture more interesting? Okay. There was another guy named Doc Edgerton, working about the same time as Halsman. He actually had a big, long career, and he's really a famous scientist in addition to being a well-known artist. In fact, he was an electrical engineer who worked at MIT, and he was the inventor of the electronic flash. And like most really good inventions, it came during a time of war. So we were trying to figure out during World War II how we could safely do reconnaissance photos over mainland Europe. At the time, before electronic flash, the only thing we could do was we could fly a plane during the daylight hours at a low enough altitude where we could take pictures of troop movements. Now the problem with that is they can see you and they can shoot you down. So there were lots of planes that were getting shot down. Somebody said, wouldn't it be great if we could do pictures at night? Edgerton, being the guy that he was, figured out a way to put gas inside of a little tube and then spark it off electronically so that it gave a big bright flash. His first version, so the little flash that's on all of your cameras, he's the guy. He's the guy who invented that, right? His first version of that was a big sort of gigantic thing that put out a lot of light. It also put out a lot of heat. The device had a big sort of reflector on it that was about 4 feet across, and there was a big giant tube in it, and when you flashed it off, it was bright enough to light the Earth from 10,000 feet up, right? It also put off enough heat so that if you hung a newspaper 3 feet in front of it, it would catch the newspaper on fire. So it was this interesting sort of scary device that they would hang on the bottom of airplanes. They would fly over Germany, and then they would take pictures at night. They could hear the planes, but they couldn't see where they were. So a lot more planes made it back safely. Edgerton also invented the sonar and the radar. He was that guy. He was really, really sharp. But in his spare time, he did pictures for art. He was curious about the aesthetics of using very, very, very fast shutter speeds, faster than even you can achieve with your sort of standard equipment. He built specialized equipment. You know, remember Superman when Superman was around, you know, and he was faster than a speeding bullet? Edgerton thought, I wonder what a speeding bullet actually looks like. There you go. That's a bullet immediately after it's pierced an apple. So he did those kinds of things. He also took pictures of lots of sports things. He took pictures of people kicking footballs and hitting baseballs to see if those things distorted when they were being kicked or hit. There are a bunch of interesting sort of things that he came up with. So there was the scientific and the artistic. And then, you know, there's the people who aren't really thinking about this as a technique at all, but are thinking about the aesthetics of it. And so, you know, this is a photographer. I couldn't find the name of who it was, but I think this is a really incredibly beautiful picture that's successful because of the shutter speed that they chose. Now, this is a you know, an old lady standing in a grove of trees where the blossoms are falling down on her. And they used a very fast shutter speed, and it looks like snowflakes, right? Don't those blossoms look like snowflakes? So it's just this beautiful picture that it's not really about shutter speed, but it's enhanced because of the shutter speed they chose. I would also, like we did the last time, I would say, if you're out there thinking about this, do that little mind exercise where you go, would this picture look good as a slow shutter speed shot? So when I look at this and try to imagine it as a slow shutter speed shot, each of those blossoms would be little streaks of white. Would that look good too? In this case, I think probably so. I think it would also be interesting and beautiful as well. So this is one I think could probably go either way, but this is the one I see, and I know it's beautiful to look at. Okay? Little kid dunking a basketball, you know? So when you do a fast shutter speed shot, it should be obvious to us that the fast shutter speed is employed. Clearly, this guy is hovering in midair, right? We need something that obvious. It can be a little difficult. I can tell you it can be a little difficult, this assignment, in regards to that without it looking sort of hokey. So you're going to need to work probably on the fast shutter speed shot a little bit harder to make it interesting. Okay. Slow shutter speed shot. So you think about this. This is done by a guy named Ralph Eugene Meatyard. Really interesting sort of guy. He was actually an optician in Lexington, Kentucky, who was very, very interested in fine art photography. And actually got so well known that lots of people would go to Kentucky to talk with him and study with him, even though he wasn't a real teacher. He sort of specialized in doing interesting pictures of his family. He had his family around him all the time, and they were sort of, you know, easy models to convince to come in and be part of the picture. So he didn't do just like these family portrait things. He was trying to do pictures that said more about how weird and interesting life can be. This is a picture of his son. When you look at this, you go, yeah, that's a slow shutter speed shot. Clearly, the little kid's standing there moving his arms like we've all done. We've all made the sort of wing movement, right? So you start to think about these wings. Now, he moves so fast in relationship to the shutter speed that his arms literally disappear. I mean, we still know he's doing it even though we can't see his arms, right? So there, we have that part. There's that technical part that we see and we understand, but then there's the aesthetic part. So, you know, when you know a person's flapping their arms, there's connotations to that. Clearly, they're making references to birds and flight, maybe even angels, right? So there's that sort of thing, connotations of movement. What does that movement mean in reference to everything else? And when you look at a picture like this, you think about movement and wings. Then you start to look at the rest of the picture and, you know, you start to see these weird sort of shapes up there that are oddly reminiscent of wings, right? These weird sort of abstract shapes up there suddenly become wings. And then there's this sort of big black circle up there in the middle. So what does all that represent? I mean, I think he's sort of offering you the option to have this picture be metaphorical. I don't think he's saying what the metaphor is. I think he's leaving that for you to decide. But clearly, that movement has connotations beyond just what the movement is. When you're using shutter speed successfully, that's how you're doing it. Okay, you're using it more than just a technical exercise. Just a reminder, this movement thing, especially on the blurred shot, there must be something sharp in the picture as a reference to that movement. So you'll notice this lady who's got her foot on the ground like that and she's twirling her dress around her. Her foot and ankle and leg are perfectly sharp and all this other stuff is potentially moving around it. Because we have this sharpness in reference to that motion, it makes it more interesting. If the photographer who did this, Karen Truex, if she had used a very slow shutter speed and said, I'm not going to use a tripod, and she had just sort of moved her camera all around, it would have been totally blurry. And chances are it would have been terribly uninteresting. It would have looked like a mistake. Generally, that's the problem with totally blurry pictures. They just look like a mistake, right? So when you're doing that slow shutter speed shot, you want to have something perfectly sharp as a reference to that motion. It'll work better if you do that. Now, there are some exceptions. This is a version of that panning shot, okay? So what happened when this photographer was working, Ken Cobray, took a picture of a rickshaw driver as he's riding down the street. Now, the photographer took a picture and moved the camera during the exposure, so he didn't have a tripod. He was hand-holding it, and he simply followed the subject. Well, you know, the subject is sharp enough so that we recognize what it is. It's not unrecognizable. When I flip this on, you go, okay, it's a guy on a bicycle at the very least, right? Could it be sharper? Well, maybe. I'll show you another example of a panning shot where it's a little bit sharper. But this is about as close to totally blurry as we can get and still find it acceptable. If there's nothing sort of recognizable in there, it's just not going to work. Okay? Slow shutter speeds, they can have this interesting sort of odd thing about them. It's about the passage of time, right? You really get a sense that time has passed in here. The twins who are at the museum are sitting there staring at a painting, and they're sitting perfectly still, and all these people in the museum are moving around them. You wonder what could be so fascinating that they wouldn't move at all, and they look frozen in time. This is a panning shot. Now, rather than having the subject move directly in front of the photographer actually ran behind these little girls. So as they were running, he was running behind them, taking pictures. Be careful if you do that. You know, you may trip on stuff. So don't hurt yourself doing the panning shot. But because he was following them, he kept them in the same place on the film plane. And so they appear to be sharp. But notice how the grass appears to be moving. It gives you a sense of speed. It gives you a sense of motion. That's what you're looking for. We're talking about referencing time and speed and motion. When your slow shutter speed picture works, it works because of those things. This is an 8-hour long exposure of stars. Right? This was done with film. You would find it very difficult to do this on a digital camera. There are some advantages to using that really slow film, but you could do a similar picture with digital photography too. You just have to work a little harder. So let me describe how this happened. The photographer had his camera on a tripod, and actually the photographer was a sculptor as well. So the sculptor, Edward Rainey, had actually excavated a very long trough in the earth with a bulldozer, and this long trough pointed directly towards the North Star. So he was an earthworks artist. So he was building a piece of art into the surface of the earth that would point directly to the North Star. To document his project, he went out and photographed it at night. So he's at one end of the trough shooting down the end, and this little notch represents that trough. And if you see, it points directly at the North Star. So how do you do this? Well, you got to start with your camera on a tripod. Okay. You can't really meter this scene. You can't meter the light from stars. It's not bright enough to register on your meter, so it's a big experiment. The way this generally works is you want to have your camera on the shutter speed B if you have that. Okay. Now, a lot of cameras, rather than having the shutter speed B, which is bulb, when you hold the shutter button down, the shutter's open, what they've done is they've given you very long shutter speed. So you may have a shutter speed that will go as long as 30 seconds. So you can actually record the light of stars in a 30 second exposure. You ought to try it just to see. It can be pretty interesting. Okay. In this particular case, it was 8 hours long. So how do you have your camera open for 8 hours without the camera shaking? Like I said, it was on a tripod. He actually had a device that he could screw into the shutter button. It's called a cable release, and it had a little locking mechanism. He would push the cable release down, lock it open, then he took his hands off of it and walked away. In fact, for all I know, he went and took a nap during that 8 hour exposure, set the alarm clock, came back and turned it off in the morning. So a lot of people have done that kind of thing. New digital cameras don't really have that cable release thing. You may have an electronic cable release if you don't have one. Sometimes they can be worth buying. They're about $20 or $30. It'll allow you to remotely trigger your camera without having your hands on it. That'll keep it from shaking the camera. So there's some things like that you consider that can give you that nice long exposure too. Okay. Here's some student examples of shutter speed. I think clearly the one most people think about in terms of the fast shutter speed is they sort of think about sports-oriented things. Let me tell you, I think it's a good idea, but it's also very, very challenging. So let me describe Daniel Meyer Coliseum, where this was taken. Daniel Meyer Coliseum is a terribly, terribly dark place in terms of photography. It's very difficult to get this kind of a shot with just sort of normal materials. You know, the guy that did this actually had some electronic flash equipment to help do that. So if you're going to go to a place like that, what you really need to do is consider how much light is actually there. You may or may not be able to do what you wanted to when you go to a place like that, or the Rickle, the Activities Building, where it's actually inside a building. Chances are it's going to be darker than you would think. Okay? So just be prepared for that. Now, if you have a little point-and-shoot camera, you may actually find it easier to do a stop action shot inside a building like that. You're just going to have to experiment. So keep that in mind. So stop action shot, girl riding a horse doing a barrel racing thing, right? You see, there's a lot of space around that. Part of that was the photographer wasn't sure. Every time the girl raced the horse around the barrels, she would go a slightly different path, so the photographer was a little concerned she might, if she got too close, that the horse would be out of the frame. So she gave it a little more space. I think in this particular case, this amount of space is okay. It's sort of interesting. We almost need that space to see what kind of activity is going on here. Okay? But, and you know, it's a little hard to tell in the digital version, but in the print version of this, you could see these sharp little dirt clods that were being kicked up from the horse. So it was a very, very fast shutter speed. Notice it's a bright, sunshiny day. That really helps a lot. Okay. I'll tell you a little story about myself, shutter speed story. I went to New Mexico one summer and went to the rodeo in Gallup, New Mexico. They have a big, famous rodeo there. And I had a brand new camera that had autofocus on it. It was like when autofocus first came out. Now, the weird thing was there was a tiny bit of a little delay that the mechanisms weren't all that great. So when I pushed the shutter button, it took just a second to really lock in the focus. So I'm doing a barrel racing thing, but I get up real close. I'm like on the front rail and the barrel's in front of me like 15 feet away. So I have like the perfect seat for it, right? I framed it nice and tight, and my intent was to catch the horse as it entered the frame and the barrel. What I didn't realize was that little delay really affected where the horse was in the picture. So I took like 72 pictures of this barrel racing event, right? I come back home, I process all the film, and every single picture was a picture of a horse's ass. So the point of the story is you have to anticipate where your things are going to be. Okay? You haven't really thought about using your camera in this particular way. As easy as it might seem in some respects, it's difficult in others because you haven't done this kind of thing. You haven't shot trying to anticipate where something was going to be in the frame. So you're going to need to think about this. If you're going to go to an event like this, what I want you to do is sit there and watch it for a little bit. See how the motion happens. See how the things move in front of you. Then once you get a good idea of where that's going to be, then you can start shooting pictures. Okay? Now, you know, it's like the stock show still going on for a little bit longer. You could probably go down there. They do barrel racing there, but it's all inside and there's not much light in there. So going there trying to use the fast shutter speed is probably not going to happen, but you could probably do it using the slow shutter speed. Okay. One other word of warning, I do not want you to use electronic flash for this. Okay. Electronic flash adds a whole other technical level that we don't want to discuss at this point. Okay, so make sure your flashes are turned off. I can tell when I look at a picture whether flash was used. There's obvious signs that flash was used in that. So turn it off, don't use it. Figure out how to use your camera without the flash. Okay. Doing that exercise, when you look at this picture of these whales that are jumping, ask yourself, would this picture work if it were a slow shutter speed shot? I mean, I see people shaking their heads no. Why won't it work? Yeah, you couldn't really tell what it was, right? I mean, I think the interesting part is that we see that there's these two massive animals that are in midair. That's not the way we get to experience them normally. There's movement and they fall down really quickly. We don't get to see what they look like stopped in that mid-arc like that. See all the little water drops are perfectly sharp like little bits of ice. You know, if this is a totally blurry picture, it may look like these two sort of black blobs in the middle of some water and we don't know what they are. Could be a fountain, could be something else, right? It needed to be sharp for us to have this understanding of this image. Here's a good one. Is this a fast shutter speed shot or a slow shutter speed shot? Fast. Why is it fast? Yeah, the ripples are really sharp. Now, the difference between this picture and the whales in terms of shutter speed, so the whales were shot at 1/1000th of a second. This one was shot at 1/30th of a second right before sunset. Okay, the shutter speed thing, in terms of fast shutter speed, it's relative to how fast your subject is moving. So you can do a stop action shot on ripples on water with 1/30th of a second shutter speed because ripples don't move very fast. Right? So think about that. The motion of your subject is relative. Okay? How fast it's moving is relative. So you need to pick a shutter speed that's appropriate for your subject. If you're going to go out and shoot pictures of race cars driving around Texas Motor Speedway and you want to do a stop action shot, you're probably going to need a 500th or 1/1000th of a second, right? But if you're going to do ripples on water, maybe 1/30th of a second is all you're going to need. It's going to depend on how much light is at the scene as well. On a bright sunshiny day, it will be very easy to get fast shutter speed shots. On an overcast day, like it was when I drove in this morning, it gets a lot more difficult to do a fast shutter speed shot. So just keep those things in mind. Slow shutter speed shot, the carnival at the stock show. This picture works because there's something sharp as a reference to this motion. If all that other stuff was moving, we wouldn't be able to tell what this was. It would just be a big mass of patterns that might or might not be very interesting. this is interesting. We can tell what this is. We can tell this sort of this tilt-a-whirl thing, and there's movement and speed. And because of that, we get the connotations of that. We know that the people who are on this ride are experiencing that. That comes to us through this picture. You don't necessarily need to travel to the country to shoot, you know, ripples on a pond. You don't necessarily need to go to the carnival. You can do it right outside your back door. In fact, this was done outside of a dorm, right? I think this is a pretty interesting picture. You know, this girl sort of dancing in the light outside the dorm. So you don't necessarily need to travel to exotic locations. All you need to do is to think about how you're going to use the shutter speed and be aware of the light that's there. Okay. Playground. You know, it pains me, but I have to give this warning these days. You know, when I started in Photo One, anybody could go to a playground and take pictures of kids and it wouldn't be a problem. Now you can't do that. The world has changed. You can't just go to a playground and start taking pictures of little kids that aren't yours. People will get really paranoid and they'll call the cops on you, okay? So if you want to do this kind of thing, the proper procedure is to walk up to the parent and say, you know, I'm a photography student at TCU. I was hoping to take pictures of your kid. And if they say no, you have to respect that, okay? So just be very careful of taking pictures, particularly of kids who aren't yours. It's a worry these days, and you can't do it anymore without having some big trouble. I've had parents call me. They said, there was somebody weird taking pictures of my kid. How are those pictures going to be used? I don't want those pictures used, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get those phone calls, okay? So either don't take the pictures or ask the parents' permission. Panning shot, okay? Let me describe the thought process that went into this, because I remember this conversation with this young lady. She went to the ripple hoping to do a fast shutter speed shot. She wanted to do a picture of a person diving off of the platform, but have them frozen in midair, hovering in space. What she discovered was there was not enough light in there to be able to successfully do that. She kept getting these blurry things, right? So she changed her concept. So she said, well, the blurry picture's not working with, you know, the diver being the blurred object. That doesn't work. It just looks funky. So what she decided to do was to do the slow shutter speed shot, because that's what the light dictated. But rather than having the subject be blurred, she decided to do the panning shot. So you have to be flexible and thinking on your feet when this stuff happens. The panning shot's actually quite nice. So the way she did it was, when the diver dove off the board, rather than keeping the camera still, she just followed the diver with her camera and took the picture as they were moving. Because the diver stayed in relatively the same place on the film plane, you see the hands are sharp, the head's sharp, you know, the body's sharp. The only thing that we start to lose are the feet. And so, you know, that's really successful. Look how the background's all blurry, though. That's interesting to look at. That's not the way we experience that event. So it's pretty interesting to look at. And the last one, which is probably the strangest one of all, but it opens up some options to you if you hadn't thought about it. Okay. So what's happening here? Does anybody know?
Taking a light on like a bulb setting, like twirling it around.
Yeah. So if you go into a totally dark room and you have a pin light and you open up your shutter for a very long time, as you walk through that picture with your little light, if you point it back towards the camera, it acts like a paintbrush except with light. In fact, we call the technique painting with light. So that the front of the flashlight records on the film or digital chip as a streak of light. So the way this person did this in room light, they set up their camera on a tripod, they composed the image, they had the person sitting there so that they would know where they were and where they were in the frame. And once they sort of figured that out, they turned out the room lights and put their camera on a very long exposure, 30 seconds. They pushed the shutter button. While the shutter was open, the photographer walked behind this person and outlined them with the flashlight, pointing it directly back at the camera lens, okay? And then the last little thing they did was they put the light right on their chest and just made a little spiral motion. And about the time that was done, the camera closed, and that was the picture they got. Okay. Pretty interesting. Who would have thought? Have you seen the Sprint commercials where the lights are forming these little shapes out in space and you see people and it's zooming between phones and businesses? That's the technique they used. So they did that painting with light thing, except they did thousands and thousands of frames of those pictures to run them together as an animation. Okay. You know, so you start to think about, well, there's the pin light thing. What else could you do? Well, you know, if you point your camera at a highway at night, all those cars with headlights on them, they're just big giant pin lights on the front of their cars. So the car headlights can record as streaks of light. The taillights can record as streaks of light. So there's a lot of potential out there. Just because it's dark outside doesn't mean you can't take pictures. There's things out there in the world that you can record with light. So very slow shutter speed. So that opens up some options for you. And I believe that is the last picture. Yeah, okay. So that's your next assignment. Questions? The main thing to keep in mind is this is not a technical exercise. Even though there's a technical component to it, we're trying to see if you know how to use your shutter speeds properly. That's not what the goal is. The goal is to make interesting pictures using fast and slow shutter speeds. Okay? Questions? Okay. That's it. So you'll have to look at the schedule to see when it's due, but it's probably a week from today, as I recall. That's that. So what we're going to do now is we're going to